Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning Indie Pro Call. Jen, can you hear me?
I can. You know what? I'm sorry, I didn't mute. Yeah, hold on 1 second. Let me mute.
Okay, we're gonna mute here in a second, everybody. So, all right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro Call, the very first call of 2020 of the new year. And I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording. Which, of course, you can do by going to motorvitality.com and listening there, or listening to Google Podcast or Apple Podcast, and you can listen to those. We have a lot of people on the call today, so I definitely want to welcome those of you. I very briefly just want to mention that we have this call every Thursday morning between 8:30 and 9 o'clock. We do not talk company, and we don't talk products, specific products at this company, but we do create a forum for those of us in the water treatment industry to discuss the things that all of us run into out there on a daily basis. We're going to do things a little differently today because we do have a guest speaker, Larry Gottlieb, president of ResinTech. Larry, is that you on that, or are we with the getting a lot of background noise there? I don't know if it's like for yours or... we did mute everybody, and so if you need to say something or you have a question or you have a comment for Larry, then star six will unmute you. We do have everybody muted here, so that we can eliminate some of the background noise, although we are getting a little bit right now. Larry, are you with us?
I am with you.
Okay, good. So I want to introduce Larry Gottlieb, who, like I said, is the president of ResinTech. And by the way, this will qualify for WQA seat credit time. Not all calls do, but this one does, because we're going to be talking some educational type stuff. And there's a lot of information to cover. I will give the seat time code, the credit code, at the end of this call. What you'll need to do at that point is just shoot me an email, and I'll give you that contact information. Shoot me an email, and I will forward your name and information directly to the Water Quality Association so that you can receive credit for that. Okay, so we will give that code out at the end of this call. So Larry Gottlieb, like I said, is president of ResinTech. He's been doing this close to 30 years, since 1991. He spent 10 years working in the Aries Filter Works division of ResinTech. Before that, Larry actually graduated from what college? I was looking at that, Larry. What college?
University of Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, University of Pittsburgh. And your degree was in?
Mechanical engineering.
There you go. Okay. So I'm going to actually post your bio up in the comments of this podcast, and that way so people know your background and we can get started in on this. I had an opportunity, Larry, to see you give a presentation on PFAS at the convention, and you and I have been speaking about this quite a bit, and I think it's a little bit relevant because your company is one of the ones that is rushing and has rushed to find a solution for PFAS. I'm going to ask you some questions a little bit off of the presentation that ResinTech and yourself put together at that convention, just to guide the conversation, and then I'd like to have a little bit of conversation just about your thoughts on the industry in general. First, one of the first questions that really jumped out at me on your presentation is you said what do airplanes, polar bears, and frying pans have in common?
Yes. First off, Kelly, thank you very much for having me on today. I appreciate it. And to those of you that have tuned in this morning, thank you for taking time out of your busy day. PFAS is an emerging contaminant, we kind of talk tongue-in-cheek about what airplanes and polar bears and frying pans all have in common, and it's that they all contain this emerging contaminant generally known as PFAS. And what we're finding is that this man-made chemical is basically, for lack of a better term, Teflon, exists in the environment today and now exists in every form of life or nature in our bloodstream. And so we've created these compounds. They've gotten out into the environment. We've ingested them. We've used them in our daily lives. Wildlife and livestock have been exposed to them. And so it is turning up literally in the blood of polar bears as well as in human beings.
So I noticed in, you know, so there's a documentary on Netflix called Dark Waters that if people haven't watched that, I would strongly recommend. It does go into a little bit of the history. It's definitely one of those documentaries that would hopefully encourage you to, I'm sorry, it's not Dark Waters. It's called The Devil We Know. The Mark Ruffalo movie just came out called Dark Waters that I haven't seen yet, but I did watch the documentary on Netflix. It does go into a history, but this stuff has been known. Do you remember how long it's been known that there were potential health risks with this stuff?
Let's see. It's somewhere here in my
It's 1961.
Yes.
1961.
It's the 1960s.
Yeah.
It was discovered in the late 1930s. And so before we really began to understand the health effects of this, you know, it was a good 20 years, which is often the case, right? In things that we make that are a benefit to us, these are emerging technologies, everyone's excited about them. And 20 years later, really the exposure and health effects of exposure begin to show up. And it usually takes place with those people, i.e. the workers at DuPont, who were directly in contact with this product during making it. And so that's really where we started to see the health effects of this, is that, you know, they started to, if you were a woman and you were, you know, you were not allowed to work in this particular section of the plant, because they knew that people working in that section of the plant were coming down with some higher rates of some serious illnesses.
It was interesting watching officials from DuPont and 3M and testify. There was actually while we were at WQA mid-year, there was they testified in front of Congress about these issues. And some of the information that came out there is they, since the 1980s, these companies have been stamping all documents related to PFAS and PFOA as attorney-client privilege, just regardless, you know, that it came out, because they've known about this. What makes, and, you know, with your experience, because I know that your company has been really involved in looking at the solutions for this and everything, but what makes this different than some of the other nationally newsworthy contaminants or stories that we've talked about?
Listen, the interesting thing about fluorinated compounds, again, what we affectionately refer to as PFOS or PFOA, is the things that we love about Teflon. Teflon is indestructible. It's nonstick. It's heat resistant. It doesn't break down. So they affectionately call this the forever chemical, because it doesn't go away. Even just burning it isn't enough to destroy it. These compounds are that heat resistant. So you have to burn them at a very specific elevated temperature. Otherwise, it just goes over up the smokestack and then falls back down to the ground. It doesn't actually get destroyed. So we've created this chemical compound that does a lot of great things for us, but it's hard to destroy. And therefore, the compounds that we're finding out in the environment that we want to get rid of, they're a little difficult to get rid of.
So how widespread is this thing?
It is, for lack of a better term, worldwide. It is showing up everywhere. And the interesting thing, you know, it's well documented. Listen, it's in Australia. It's in Canada. It's in America. It's in Europe. It is everywhere. But different governments have different levels of tolerance for how much is acceptable or allowable. So we know that it's there. We know that it's worldwide, widespread. The one thing I think the research is not clear on is how much of it is detrimental to human health. And so it's going to take some time for, the medical industry, the scientific industry as a whole to really give us its long-term health effects. Arsenic, we know. We've been looking at it for decades, for hundreds of years. It's a known contaminant, and it's fairly well known how much of it is going to elevate your risk for cancer. The PFAS version of that isn't really well known yet. So we know that it's there. We have technologies to remove it and accumulate it, but the level is not well regulated yet because people don't really know how much of it is going to hurt you.
Yeah, let's talk about that for just a second, because you and I both have had an opportunity to go to Capitol Hill as part of the Water Quality Association DC fly-in, and we've done that in conjunction with the last couple of years. We've done that kind of with the AWWA to try and build some of the relationships together with them. That's the American Water Works Association is the counterpart to the Water Quality Association, except for municipal water, for water treatment. And we've worked really hard to combine, to try and work well with them together on issues that we share. But what has been your take, as we've sat down in the offices of legislators and talked about this issue, which is definitely, it affects every community in the country. In so many different ways. There are so many catch and release water basins and so many states, and will probably be more as they actually test for it and look at it. But what's been your impression of the reaction from the legislators? What has really struck you as you've sat down and talked to them on Capitol Hill?
It's a big question. In the absence of leadership by the federal EPA Environmental Protection Agency, the states don't really have clear direction to follow. So now you have 50 independent states that are trying to determine what's right for them. It's 2020 already, or it's 2020 already, and it really in only about 5 years ago was we really started to see some legislation begin to form around this issue. And last year, in 2019, the EPA had a, it was very interesting, they had a countrywide announcement on PFAS. So there's I don't know, maybe nine different regions of the EPA that really cover the whole country, and they all had simultaneous press conferences announcing that they were going to continue to study PFAS in the environment before putting in a definitive regulation. So the suggested limit right now, it's not a law, it's a suggestion, is 70 parts per trillion, okay?
Per trillion.
And per trillion. So again, that's very, very important. In water treatment, we think about hardness. It's parts per million, okay? In organics, as we get to lower levels, we talk about parts per billion. This stuff is coming down to parts per trillion. Imagine trying to find, one dime in the middle of a trillion pennies. These are very, very low levels. And some of the reason this is coming to light today is that the instrumentation, used to analyze at these very low levels wasn't readily available. And the procedures to analyze this wasn't well defined. In addition, these fluorinated compounds, we talk about PFAS. That is one particular compound of literally thousands of potential fluorinated compounds that are, that have been used, that are available to make the products that we use. So there's PFOA, there's PFAS, there's PFNA, there's PFBS. I think the EPA method currently can test for, roughly 20 of these compounds. But there are literally potentially thousands of these that are in use or that exist. Okay, so back to your question. EPA has a suggested limit of 70 ppt. what we heard when we lobbied Congress is they were really hoping the states that EPA would set a defined limit that required municipalities across the country to meet that limit, and they did not. So the states are now coming up with their own limits. And the states that are most interested in defining limits are the states that have the most widespread contamination of PFAS. So California and New Jersey are big, but surprisingly, Michigan is one of the leaders, right? And one of the congressmen from Michigan is a gentleman who's kind of leading this charge federally, because PFAS takes to
Representative Dan Kildee, and also Alyssa Slotkin is very, very involved in this.
Yes. What state?
Michigan. So Dan, Representative Dan Kildee and Alyssa Slotkin both they're very passionate about these issues.
Yeah.
The entire Huron River Basin is catch and release right now. So it's absolutely affecting the state.
Listen, one of my closest friends, his daughter goes to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. It's a city of about 75,000 people, and they exceed the federal limit of PFAS in their water. Mm-hmm. And this is a lay person who called me up very concerned about the health and safety of his child while going to college. Because it's not talking about 5 ppt or 10 ppt, we're talking about 70 or 80 ppt, which is right at the suggested limit. But it's not like they're doing anything wrong because it isn't a law. And so he is looking for, you know, if the municipality can't deliver you water that you feel safe about, what is he going to do? So, of course, our industry, you know, that needs more attention is point of entry and point of use. So if you can't rely on the municipality to give you safe drinking water, we need the world to know that there are other technologies within our membership group that can handle these problems. And so he went, he bought a certified product off the shelf, and that is what his kid uses for drinking water.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because you're absolutely right. This is, and people that are on this call regularly know that I talk about this and have for years and years and years, the importance of our industry in regards to final barrier. There's frankly only so much a municipality can do economically or even practically, you know, so what are, you know, and I don't want to get into the specifics, obviously, because that's not what we do in the company and I are on this call, but, and I know that your company has created one option, which I think is worth mentioning, but what are the suggested treatment methods of the PFAS issue? How can a customer treat it?
I'm gonna back up just a little bit. I'm gonna take off my hat as the president of ResinTech and put on my hat as a member of the Board of Governors of the Water Quality Association. And to those of you that are listening today that are members of the Water Quality Association, the one thing that Kelly and I did, along with other members of WQA, and is we went to Congress and we lobbied them and told them, hey, you guys are forgetting about us. You guys don't realize that if the municipalities can't deliver good, clean, pure water to their customers, then we have an entire industry here in the U.S. that's represented by us that can provide a variety of different technologies, whether it's resin or membrane or filters. There's a whole group of us that can provide point of use and point of entry solutions to things like arsenic, like lead, like PFAS, and that our association of companies have certified products that are certified to remove these compounds. And so, again, if you don't want to dig up the roads and the streets and tear the piping out of the buildings, which is going to, you know, be a huge undertaking, then there are technologies available today made in America, you know, supported by Americans, by members of the WQA, you know, to tackle these problems. And so to your question, listen, there are a variety of certified technologies besides what I sell that are certified to remove PFAS.
And some of those are resin.
Let the legislators know.
So resin is definitely, so putting this in a tank that can run through as a, you know, sort of, I mean, like a softener. So is that an absorption resin or adsorption resin, or is it a, does it ion exchange the PFAS out?
It's a great question, and the technology is very complex and complicated. Some of these compounds They're different sizes, they're different shapes. Some of them are cationic, some of them are anionic, some of them are non-ionic. So, you know, what we are finding in our research and development is that based on the particular nature of the fluorinated compound, different technologies work differently to remove them. So some of them are absolutely ion exchange, and resin is a very good technology at the removal of these things. But activated carbon is also a very good technology. And you can't just throw one technology at the entire problem. What we're finding here is that we need to take a little better look at which of these compounds are present, which ones are problematic, and which ones you want to remove. So it's a very interesting field of study.
Are there problems with dumping carbon? You know, with when the carbon is exhausted, are there disposal issues? And also, are there, you know, with drain water in terms of the ion exchange technologies for the PFAS, is that of concern? Are you dumping a concentrated contaminated water back into the ground?
So the ion exchange resins are not regenerable.
Okay.
So you use them once, you accumulate, and you throw it away. And in general, filtration is a technology of concentration. You take a huge quantity of water, and you remove all of the contaminants from that water, and you put it on a relatively small filter.
Mm-hmm.
So everything, right, mass is conserved. Nothing is gained or lost. Everything that existed in your water is still there. It's just now on your filter. So what do you do with it? And that was, you know, back to, you know, my incineration question. Some compounds can be converted via chemistry into non-volatile substances. Some of them can be destroyed via other chemistry where they're broken down into their less harmful components. And some of them, in order to be broken down, need to be burnt. For PFAS, again, it's relatively indestructible as a chemical compound. So it can be incinerated, but it needs to be incinerated, you know, in a proper manner. Otherwise, you're going to gather it all up and you're going to bury it and you're going to take a lot of it in the water and put it in a relatively small, you know, filter or concentration. And then what to do with it from there is, you know, problematic. It still exists unless you go through the efforts of destroying it.
Yeah. So I want to, we've got just a couple minutes, you know, about 5-6 minutes left here. And I want to turn this a little bit.
It does go fast.
It does. It's very fast. And there's so much information. And I really, what I wanted to do by having you on is to whet the appetite, because I really want people listening to this call and in our industry to educate our consumers, to get out there, spread the word about the final barrier, about the options available. This really is a serious contaminant that is affecting everybody. Everybody. There's nobody around really that does not have this in their bloodstream at some level. It's so widespread on a global scale. And to that, you and I were having a discussion the other day that I thought was really interesting. You know, I've been doing this over 20 years and have seen in the last 20 years, you've been doing it longer than me, about 10 years longer than me even, but it's been interesting because periodically you see these emerging contaminants, I guess you would say. So things that have been around for a long time, but you know, I saw the arsenic was one of the most fascinating because obviously arsenic has been around for a long time. We've known about it. Like you said, it's a naturally occurring contaminant in the Earth's crust. But yet when the U.S. in 2001 lowered the standards for arsenic from 50 parts per billion to 10 parts per billion, it became a national news story. And it took our industry 2 or 3 years to catch up to the treatment methods. And so because our industry is driven by consumers a lot of times, and it's just not practical to put in the research and development if there's not a market for it. And that's, whether fortunate or unfortunate, it is the way the world works in a lot of ways. So, you know, we saw that with arsenic. It's interesting. You and I were talking about lead has now come back on the forefront. As you have, and now we're kind of seeing that with the PFAS issue too. We've known about PFAS.
it's interesting. 3 years ago, when I went to DC and spoke to them, it was incredible how many of them had never even heard of PFAS. The next year, more people. That was even some of them in Michigan, you know. And now the next year, it's becoming more known. And this year, like you said, there has actually been some action, albeit in my opinion, not enough on this issue. But what have you seen? You know, you had an interesting answer when I asked you this the other day about what has most surprised you. You know, 5 years ago, before PFAS was on anybody's radar, what were you thinking about? And what do you expect to see in the future with all of this stuff?
So you and I were talking, you know, before the call yesterday or the day before, and if you had asked me 5 years ago what I thought the emerging contaminant of the future would be, I would have said pharmaceuticals and water. There was a lot of talk amongst, you know, the industry scientists and professionals that, you know, there's antibiotics in the water, there's Tylenol in the water, there's all sorts of you know, pharmaceuticals that we take, that we excrete, that wind up, you know, in our wastewater, that wind up back in the environment, that are now getting pumped back into our pipes. And I really would have thought that was the future. And I'm surprised the PFAS kind of came out of, you know, to some extent, nowhere. And then, of course, it's interesting to know that, you know, lead that we thought was done in the world is suddenly back at the forefront of the picture. I mean, there's not a day that goes by that people aren't talking about lead in schools, lead in water. And yet we thought we had that covered, you know, got 50, 60, 70 years ago. So some of it depends on, you know, what the news picks up, you know, what becomes, you know, popular to talk about at the time. And God, I after 30 years in the industry, you know, it just surprises me that this one kind of, you know, took us by surprise. I couldn't have told you 5 years ago that this was going to be today's problem.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I just so love about this industry is just how it never gets boring. I mean, this is one of the most fascinating industries. For those of you that are new into this industry, if you choose, you will never be unemployed in the industry. It's just an awesome and exciting industry that actually makes a difference. And so in the last 2 minutes that we have here, I want to see if there are any questions. And if you have a question for Larry, just hit star six. Any questions or comments for Larry, hit star six, and we can ask those.
Hello, this is Chris Powell. I have a question.
Hey, Chris.
Morning, Chris.
Yeah, hi. Can this be absorbed through the skin?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that. It's actually part of my conclusion around this issue. That if you'll give me just a minute, I will give to you. In the absence of any federal limit, the states are running out and setting their own limits. And the thing that is, you know, shocking to me is that people are setting limits with no true idea of limits versus health effects. So the suggested limit is 70 parts per trillion. States are self-regulating this down to as low as 13 parts per trillion. But nobody's come back to me and said, you know, if you drink it, if you shower in it, does it go through the skin? And by the way, here's the level, and here's how your chances of getting this kind of cancer increase at that level. So it's a little bit like the Wild West out there, and there's a lot more work to do. So this thing is just starting. We're going to be talking about this for a lot of years to come.
So then are there then technologies out there at point of entry and point of use that's going to hit like a ballpark of these contaminants? Like PFOA, we're going to take care of that one with this technology, and then this other contaminant that's a fluorinated compound, you take care of it this way. Is there altogether one type of system that can just say, you know what, we don't know what's in the water, what else is here, so this is
the answer is that all of the compounds are removed, but they're not all removed equally. And so, you know, resin versus carbon, you know, in the beginning they're all can get removed, but as the filter continues on, some of them are going to start to come through first while others are continuing to be removed. And then the water chemistry might determine, do you want more of this product or more of that product? But what I've seen so far is that everything we've looked at is pretty well removed. It's really as the filter starts to exhaust that you want to make sure that you are still continuing to capture the compound that you're going after.
Larry, would it be okay if I ask, and I'm putting you on the spot here, so I guess other people may have questions they may think of. Would it be okay if I put a contact email there for you if they have questions either about ResinTech or this issue that they can reach out to you on this?
Would be my pleasure.
Perfect. We are out of time, everybody. Let me give you this code. Larry, before we go, I just want to say how much I appreciate your taking your time on this call and also just what you do in and for this industry as a rule in general. You are a good human, and you just bring a lot to this industry, and I'm proud and honored to know you and call you my friend. So everybody else, thank you so much for joining us on this call. Please join us. We've got some excellent guest speakers coming up in 2020, but even in general, we just have some awesome discussions. So please join us every Thursday at 8:30. Let me give you the code. What you're going to need to do is send this code, please, directly to me at KellyT@motivitality.com. KellyT@motivitality.com. That's MOTIVITALITY.com. Make sure that you send your name, the company that you're with, and just put in the subject line PFAS call credit. Okay. And so the code that we're going to use to prove that you've listened to this is just simply PFAS01920. Okay, so again, that's just the date today. So PFAS010920. Okay, send that to me, and I will forward that on to the appropriate parties at WQA so that you can receive credit for this. Again, it is my honor to do this call, and Larry, I really appreciate it a lot. Everybody, be safe, and we should have this call uploaded within 24 hours. If you want to listen again or go back or share it, that'd be great. And everybody be safe. We'll talk to you next week, if not before. Larry, you rock. Thanks a bunch.
All right, bye.